More.
Chicken lay. Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, smart talk about food, wine, and farming here in Sonoma County, the North Bay, and often beyond. How are you doing this fine, beautiful, almost spring day? Hope you had a chance to get out to a farmer's market or two this weekend. The spring crops are just starting to come in. It's interesting. Farmers are now selling a lot of fava leaves, some with a little flower that turns into the bean attached. They're very beautiful. They are delicious as well. And it's one of the newer things. For a long time, it was even hard to find fava beans themselves. Now, it's really easy to find fava beans, though. It's about 3 to 4 weeks early, but you can make use of the fava leaves. You can make salsa. Salsa verde is really nice with fava leaves. Some people just chop them up or grind them up like they were making pesto and go from there in a very similar way that they do with basil. And I also saw I actually bought some really wonderful French breakfast radishes at the Sebastopol Farmers Market today. So spring is definitely underway here in the North Bay. And we have one of my very favorite guests, one of my very favorite people, a master baker who has influenced so many American bakers, and I would suspect bakers in other countries as well. Craig Ponsford, welcome back to Mouthful.
Thank you. It's so nice to see you. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Oh, well, it's great. It's always great to have you here. And I think the last time you were here, it was to talk about community grains.
That's correct.
And I know that you had a terrible time getting here. There was a wreck on 101, and I think complete with helicopters landing and everything.
I forgot about that. Yes, yeah. Yes. Bob Klein.
Right, with Bob Klein.
Which is coincidence. He just called me like minutes before I walked through the door.
Oh, really?
So I didn't get to talk to him, but it's I don't talk to him every day, so for his name to come up today.
Bob and Maggie Klein, of course, of Oliveto in Oakland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Community Grains is thriving.
They're doing well. Yeah, I haven't talked to him. I just was able to read his message and said, I have a lot to talk to you about. So I'm assuming it's about Community Grains.
Cool. You know?
So he's always a very enthusiastic man and full of energy.
Absolutely.
So I'm sure he's excited about sharing some new news.
And then you have a newish, fairly new project.
Pretty new. I've been hired to help run the Artisan Baking Center, which is a baking school right here in Petaluma or near here in Petaluma that is under the Keith Giusto Baking Supply Distribution Company.
Uh-huh.
And the Central Milling is the name of the whole company is called Central Milling.
Oh, and I know that before this, you had Ponsford's Place in San Rafael.
Yes, and I still have Ponsford's Place, and it's a very quirky little situation that always has been confusing to people, but now even more so.
Yes.
And I have young, what I consider young folks that have been popping it up, that rent it for a few days here and there, and then I try to open it about one day a month when I personally open it.
Okay.
Yes.
So one day a month, but it's open several days a week, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing consistent. So it's really week to week, and it's difficult to be in the in crowd. But if you would like to write me an email, you can send me an email at ponsfordsplace@gmail.com, and we'll put you on the email list.
Oh, and you let people know?
We let people know. So the only way that you have any clue what we're up to is by being on that email list. And we have like 1,600 people on that list.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so when people open, they sell out.
Mm-hmm.
We have a very loyal crowd.
And what are the specialties?
Well, bread is generally, a big part of what I do, and it's whole grain is also part of what I do. So these people are trying to emulate a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
But to be honest, I'm so busy these days that I don't even get to check in really, other than seeing their pictures. But it looks like beautiful bread. My customers tell me that they're very excited that I'm allowing that to happen.
Great. And I know the bread is spectacular. When you were here last time, it was, I think, just before Christmas, and you brought a couple of loaves, and I left like a day or two later for New Orleans and Mississippi, and that bread stayed delicious from, I think I was there 2 or 3 weeks, and the bread was fabulous the whole time.
Yeah, the breads I make tend to have a, some of them that I make, especially, I imagine I gave you a pumpernickel or something like that.
Give me something round.
Yeah, very dense and round. Uh-huh. And that bread, people have told me that it lasts for 3 weeks, but most people eat it a lot quicker than that, so it doesn't.
Sure. Well, when I first got there, we spent several days in New Orleans. And then went back and spent several more days in New Orleans. So it was a while before we said, oh, bread.
Bread,
and it was just so good.
Thank you very much.
And you have brought a guest with you.
Yeah, my wife is with me, Diana Binner. And
welcome,
she's
Diana.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
She's just kind enough to have been my...
your chauffeur.
My chauffeur.
And Diana, you have... a nursery in Petaluma, is that right?
Our nursery is in Point Richmond. We grow California native plants.
Oh.
And we specialize in growing for restoration projects. So I'm the project manager, and we grow on a contract basis for local restoration projects.
Mm-hmm. Would that be like post-fire, post-flood sort of things?
Post-fire or... folks like Marin Municipal Water District, if they have a slide and they want to revegetate, East Bay Regional Parks says to widen a road and mitigate for that impact.
What a good thing to be doing. Thank
you. It's pretty fun. We have a retail section, too, for people who want to garden with California natives for the feeding. He feeds people, and we feed the birds and the bees and the butterflies.
Yeah. My brother-in-law... I'm not married anymore, but you don't divorce your in-laws. My brother-in-law, Joe Wagner, is a huge, I don't even know what to call it, proponent, fan. That doesn't imply how deeply into this he is. He's really into native plants. And he has property up about 8 miles west on Green Valley Road that he's had since the 70s. And you can walk through it, and it just looks like beautiful greenery. And he will be saying, he will point out all the native plants, tell you where he got them. And there's even one that is named after him because no one knew of it.
Ooh.
And I forget if it's, I know that it ends in Wagneri, but I forget, I don't think it's a Madrone, I can't remember, but this was a long time ago, early 70s, that he discovered this plant and called up whomever you would call up in San Francisco, and they indeed did not have it, and he was able to... register it, and or whatever you do with his name on it.
There's a great website called CalFlora, and I bet if you went in there and just searched on Wagneri,
could find it,
you could find that.
Oh, cool.
Planet. Yeah.
Cool. But now we're going to talk about baking, and we're going to talk about the Artisan Baking Institute. Is that, did I get it right?
It's called the Artisan Baking Center.
Center. Okay.
Yes.
Tell us about it.
Well, it's been built by Keith and Nikki Giusto.
Are they of Giusto?
They're
flour and grain.
Yes.
Okay.
I've
used their polenta a lot.
Yeah. So Giusto's the Giusto name is a little confusing, and if I can help straighten that out for some people, there's a business in South San Francisco called Giusto's that the family owned for years and years and years and sold, I believe, in the early 2000s.
Oh, okay.
And at this particular point in history, there are no family members that work for the Giusto business.
Okay.
And they're all part of the Central Milling, Keith Giusto Baking Supply, the Artisan Baking Center. That's all been moved up this way.
Mm-hmm.
And so people are confused with, for good reason.
Mm-hmm.
So the cool thing about this place for me that I really love is that it is an employee-owned business, and it also owns the. I mean, so we as the employees own the mills, many of the farms, and the distribution center, and now a baking school that was primarily main intention was to be for the customers that they sell flour to. So it's a really full circle kind of situation there. To have relationships with the farmers as old as these are family, the Giustos have known these farmers for years and years and years. They've been in business. The original business opened, I'm not even quite sure, but I think the 50s or something like this. And so Keith and Nikki are third or fourth generation of Giustos and have maintained these relationships. So we have the farms, we have the mills, and then we distribute the flour and we are the bakers. So it's a very unique situation in regards mm-hmm. to A through Z being all in one house. Mm-hmm. Generally, it's the farmers by themselves mm-hmm. and then the millers by themselves and then the bakers by themselves and a distribution company that is, you know, often doesn't even know what they're distributing.
Sure.
So it's really the knowledge is incredible. I'm mm-hmm. really enjoying that. And so I'm the lucky one that gets to I, with Ariel Justo, Nikki Justo's wife, are running the school. She's the administrative aspect, and mm-hmm. I'm kind of the in-kitchen manager mm-hmm. and set up all the different kinds of classes we do, and I teach quite a lot there mm-hmm. now.
And how frequent are the classes?
We probably have 5 or 6 classes a month that mm-hmm. range from 2 days to a half a day. Some of those classes are for professionals only, and some mm-hmm. of them are only for customers. So mm-hmm. people don't even know they're happening. And then we have a few classes that are for the public. So mm-hmm. we usually have, you know, it's very worthwhile, whatever we're doing each month. I try to open up 3 or so, 4 days for the public. Mm-hmm. And I have incredible people teaching classes uh-huh. that are, you know, really, really, there's no way. I mean, everybody that's come through the program so far, you know, leaves lighter on their feet, mm-hmm. smiling and extremely feeling like they just learned an enormous amount of stuff about baking.
Excellent. Now, what's the geographic range of the farms and the mills?
I don't have a complete understanding of all the farms, but mm-hmm. the number I've heard is that we're in 10 states.
I was thinking Northern California.
No, 10 different states that mm-hmm. we grow our wheat at. And then the mills are all in Utah, or the majority of them. We mm-hmm. use mills in California. Like they'll co-mill for us. The people own those mills, but will mill things for us because we have a specific line of products that are California grown and milled. Mm-hmm. For the people that really want to focus on that, we have those kind of products also.
Mm-hmm. And then where is the milled product, where is that available?
Well, for us lucky enough to live in the Bay Area, especially the home and amateur baker, mm-hmm. they have a retail store right here in Petaluma.
Oh, okay.
And I should get the address. Would you mind looking that up for me?
Just we've got time. Sure, you know, we give addresses, websites, all that
great
information right at the end of the show. So people know.
I know how to drive there, but I
I don't know the names of anything. Yeah, I know how to get everywhere. Yeah. I don't know the
name
of anything.
It's in Pen Grove, and we'll give you guys that information. Okay. So it's very close to here. It's it's on Home Road, which is a frontage road right on the highway. So when you're driving 101 north, you can actually see the building that says Keith Justo Baking Supply has a big uh-huh. sign on the side of it. Uh-huh. And that's where the school is. It looks like a warehouse, but there's a $2 million facility inside there that I'm uh-huh. running. It's a state-of-the-art, beautiful culinary school. It's really about as nice as I could imagine. Mm-hmm. And I've been lucky enough to teach all over the world. So it's a real blessing.
Yeah, excellent. I want to get a little bit technical to explain to home bakers, especially the difference in the grains from the ground, the whole supply chain. Mm-hmm. What makes that superior to, you know, going to a good market mm-hmm. and buying some organic flour off the shelf? What's the difference?
Well, the difference is that in some cases it's us that's in the market. So, for example, we do have the 365 brand in Whole Foods. That's our flour that's here on the mm-hmm. West Coast, and it's good quality flour. There are other flours that are good quality. What's the difference for me that's been very – my career in terms of white flour – my career has taught me to use any white flour, and I'm pretty happy with it. However, now that I've been working with their kind of most popular white flour, the number one flour that they sell to both professional and amateurs, this flour is amazing. It's beyond anything I've ever used, and it has a lot to do with this relationship I'm talking about mm-hmm. of the baker having a huge influence on what the farms are growing. And we own the mills, so we're able to mill the way we want to mill and blend mm-hmm. the types of wheats that we want to blend mm-hmm. in order to get the results that we want as bakers. Mm-hmm. And I'm really not easily impressed, and I'm totally blown away by this mm-hmm. flour. And so far, so are all my peers that I've brought in to teach. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, it doesn't matter if we're making croissant or Danish or baguettes or ciabatta, this particular flour functions no matter what anybody tries to do with it, and it's pretty impressive. And it's also very tasty and colorful. So, and that's called Artisan Baker's Craft, ABC we call it.
ABC. I remember that the last time you were here, one of the things you were so excellent, articulate about explaining was the difference between assembled whole wheat and natural whole wheat.
Right.
Where does that style fit into what?
So this is
now.
This is a very interesting. You and I think have known each other for probably close to 30 years, or I'm afraid to say maybe 25.
Yeah. Well, what year did
92 is when we opened the bakery,
and we should say that's
Artisan Bakers
yep. in the town of Sonoma. And you were the initial baker.
Yes, I mean it's my bakery with my parents. Yes.
Right. So yeah, almost 30 years.
Yeah, well, quite a while. So you've seen my career evolve. And so when I was here last, I was 100% focused on whole grain flours.
Right.
And that had a lot to do with my employer. I was working for a miller that only milled whole grain flours. Mm-hmm. And I threw myself 100% into that and dedicated myself to only whole grain flours and not using any white flours whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Ever.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I'll talk to you about the milling question, but let me just finish. Now that I'm working Central Milling, I'm able to work, I mean, what I consider myself as an artist, and the reason that I focused on whole grain is because I wasn't very good at it, and I wanted to eliminate what I do really well, which is white flour. Mm-hmm. And I had no other real intention other than really get my craft down better. Mm-hmm. In the process of that, I learned all about health and all kinds of milling, and I have a lot of opinions about it. Mm-hmm. But I've never been anti-white flour. Mm-hmm. It was just
it was what you were doing at that time.
At that time. So that was about 7 years of my career that I did that. And now, just in the last 10 months, it's really the first time that I've been using white flour and or these awesome flours I'd love to talk to you about through milling that are available to all of us, which is a very unique situation. The type of flours that are available here in Petaluma and can also be bought online, they ship flour all over the country, are not available. They're really not... in our country, the United States, they're very rare to be lucky enough to get to use. Mm-hmm. Now I feel like I have the paint. I really have white paint to all the color paints to make whatever kind of breads that I want to make. So I'm actually having a really awesome kind of revitalizing for me, getting to use white flour or flours that are in between white flours and whole grain flours, and then or whole grains. And so it's a whole lot of different colors to me. Mm-hmm. And I'm very comfortable with using whatever particular. I like scooping. I literally will have 5 or 6 bags of flour around me, and I just randomly scoop to kind of get the weight that I need, because I just like blending these colors and flavors. But anyway, so what they do there is millers use a technique. There's a whole lot of instruments that are used to measure flour for the farmer, for the miller, for the baker. And all these tools are at laboratories that are at mills and or can be hired. Like there's a place called the California Wheat Commission that any one of us, if you were happen to have a friend in Sebastopol that was growing, 20 acres of wheat, can send a sample of their wheat and it would be thoroughly tested so they understand exactly what that wheat can do. Mm-hmm. And maybe that wheat would perform in a way that that it would make shortbread. You know, a cookie.
So it'll actually tell you.
Yeah, it'll tell you the
how
protein.
How it will perform the best. In what way it will perform the
exactly.
best.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, it's super fascinating. And so there's probably 8 or so instruments or 10. I'm not super well. I'm not a scientist, but I've been in the lab. I've used a lot of equipment. I'd say probably on average there's 8 to 10 different instruments that measure the flour in many different ways that will give you, as a baker and or a farmer or a commodity salesperson information in order to judge how much that flour is worth and what it should be used for. And so one of the instruments they use is called an ash test. And what it is they actually will burn, I think it's just 1 gram of flour, a very small amount of flour. Mm-hmm. They'll burn it in an incinerator for 12 to 24 hours. And whatever's remaining is the mineral content. It doesn't burn.
Oh.
And they'll weigh that. And that will tell you how much mineral content that is in the flour itself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a cool number because it tells you for example, most white flowers, the way they will define the ash is they'll say that it has 0.5, 0.55% ash. Mm-hmm. I don't know if percent's the right way of saying it. It just says 0.55 ash.
Okay.
And there can be white flowers that are as low as 0.4.
Okay.
A whole grain flower will be commonly in the 1.5 to 2. Okay, mm-hmm. So white flour is extracted, the germ in the, when you have white flour that's been milled, the majority of the minerals are in the germ and the bran.
Mm-hmm.
So when you hear 0.4 or 0.5, they've extracted almost everything out of that wheat, and all that's left is endosperm, which has very little mineral content. And you just know this as it's a line in the sand, and you know that if it says 1.5, that it's probably a whole grain flour. It really depends on Mother Nature, though. Not every berry is the same. So you mm-hmm. can have one varietal wheat that's 1.5, and you can have another varietal wheat is 2. And the difference of that is the percentage of bran that's on that wheat can be 30% or 40%. And if it's a 40% bran, then the ash content's going to be higher because there's
right.
more minerals.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So the cool thing that Central Mills has available is that they have, of course, white flour, their ABC that I talked about before is a 0.6, but then they also have a 0.7, a 0.8, a 0.85, and a 1.1 flour. So mm-hmm. not just the white flour, the 0.6, and not just the whole wheat, the 1.5,
mm-hmm.
but all these cool flours in between that are kind of from whitest to darkest and all the shades of color.
And you mean literal color?
Yeah, literally okay. also, literal but also in a way of and you know a way of understanding, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yes, but literally too, it'll be very white to whole mm-hmm. grain. Yes.
And what impact or influence does the mineral content have on baking?
Well, I mean, generally, I mean, if the reason white flour has been so popular and something that we've striven for maybe, I had a scientist work with me a few weeks ago, and he said historically any records of us doing any kind of milling back to, you know, pre-Jesus, we were always extracting something from the grains. We were always trying to, purify it.
Uh-huh.
Primarily because the outside of wheat is filthy and or any other thing that you harvest out
sure.
on the farm. So being able to clean the outside of it is a challenge. But also because of performance. So
mm-hmm.
things tend to function as a baker. We have this infatuation with volume. And
mm-hmm.
I call myself a gas bag maker. I mean, I really get off on making. I mean, I love gluten. I really mm-hmm. find it super amazing what it does by capturing gas. And the more of the germ and bran that are removed, the more gas we capture. So just as a artist, not thinking
you need to explain a little bit about what capturing gas means
yes.
for people who,
okay.
you know, don't bake and watch it rise.
Right. So a gas bag, you know, as I explain it, is, you know, basically fermentation.
Mm-hmm.
When we use yeast, either commercially or natural, like sourdough, we are gluten acts much like a balloon. When yeast are eating the starches in flour, they digest, and the digestion is gas, and it's alcohol and CO2, and it expands the balloon, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So when we make white flour, we've extracted all the bran and germ primarily because those are like little razor blades on the balloon.
Mm-hmm.
So in the discussion of performance only, not talking about nutrition
right.
or anything like that, the more of the bran and germ we can get away from the wheat berry, the better it performs. And that's just been, I think, an infatuation of mankind. It's really fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's really fun to capture a lot of gas.
And that explains croissants. And the delicacy and volume of a croissant
mm-hmm.
is a function of what you just explained.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. And on that note, we're going to take a musical break in honor of the holiday. You might want to get out a tissue. I might need one myself. But we're taking a break right now in part because Craig just told us a mouthful, and let that digest a little bit while you listen to this exquisite version of a traditional song.
Oh, Danny boy, the pipes, the the pipes are calling, let not your dying thoughts be just of me, but say a prayer to God for our dear Ireland. I know she'll hear and help to set her free.
That is, of course, Sinead O'Connor when she was quite young. And I just find that the most tender version of that song that I have ever heard. We are talking with the absolutely brilliant master baker, Craig Ponsford. I could just listen to you nonstop. Do your students get to hear you speak a lot about these things?
Yeah, I mean, some of the reasons I took the job were, one is that I've taught most of my career, but never professionally. So, you know, I'm always kind of a winging it. And I, you know, I've had incredibly kind things said to me over the years that I'm a good teacher, but I knew in my heart that I'm not that good, just because I don't do it for a living. And so the opportunity to teach every week now is really helping me fine tune those skill sets. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I'm really having a fun time talking to the students and really trying to articulate and think of analogies and really put a lot of energy into teaching in a way that can make sense to people, you mm-hmm. know. So it's I'm having a good time. It's really fun.
I have no doubt that you are extremely good at it. You're so articulate. You always have been.
Thank you.
I want to touch you. You mentioned gluten and loving gluten. Mm-hmm. What do you make of the gluten insanity these days?
I mean, I it's very fascinating to me because when I had Ponsford's Place, I still have it, but when I was open all the time down in San Rafael. Marin County, you know, has maybe people perceive it to maybe have a better educated consumer base in regards to food, especially in health. And I found, and I was having a whole grain bakery, long fermented items, which all you hear if you listen to heart disease and cancers, all that, eat more whole grains. And mm-hmm. I had all these people coming in and telling me that they don't eat wheat. And mm-hmm. I found it extremely frustrating because I really believe that what I make is about as healthy of a food it can be made. Mm-hmm. And I also lived through the Atkins period of time, which that was really hard on bakeries.
Yes, absolutely. And now it is the whole keto thing is hard.
It's hard, yeah. And so I find, you know, I'm frustrated by how people trend and not mm-hmm. think about just good guidance that's been given to us from the get-go. I believe mm-hmm. I've always heard eat whole foods. And then to get thrown under the bus if you're not eating that way, you know, there is a lot of horrible bread being sold in our country that's mm-hmm. not good for you. There's mm-hmm. no doubt about it. I wouldn't blame it on the gluten, though. I would blame it on the high amount of added gluten. So a lot of breads that are full of seeds and whole grains cheat and add a significant amount of more gluten to that product in order to make it lofty and hold a lot of gas.
In what can you isolate gluten as a separate protein and then add it?
For sure. It's it is a very healthy protein. And there are countries, China, I believe, eats a great deal of just straight up gluten mm-hmm. As a protein source with flavors added to it. I mean, mm-hmm. if you go to a Chinese market, they'll have a whole aisle of just gluten food. It's weird.
And a lot of, I guess, faux meat, we'll say.
Right, for sure.
It's flavored gluten.
Exactly that. For sure, as a baker, I've never have in my whole career done it, but I've worked with it as a product developer for other clients, but mm-hmm. you can buy gluten, just a sack of gluten, and 1% of that it added to a flour that I would make, if you did it without me knowing, I would wonder what the hell happened to my flour because it adds so much significant more strength. I would be confused.
So it would rise more.
Rise
than you
more.
Would expect it
it'd
to.
Be stronger. Yeah, than mm-hmm. I expected to. So a lot of these companies that are making what we a lot of people perceive as healthy food, whole grain, especially on the marketplace in a grocery store, are adding 10% of this gluten to
10%.
So instead of a flour being a whole grain flour being 14% gluten, it's 24% gluten. And if you ever have pure gluten in your hand without anything else around it, it's much like a Super Bowl or a piece of chewing gum. Much like gar gum, by the way, or xanthan, all of them, I can't believe, are all that good to, for us to digest in unnatural amounts. And so gluten fermented the way that I ferment it, long fermentation, how all slow fermented artisan style breads are made, and just the natural amount that comes with it, I don't believe causes people troubles. But if their gut is already screwed up because of all the processed foods that we eat in our country and all the excessive amounts of sugar that we eat, all these things that make our gut not function well, then this super glutinous bread that might be you thinking you're making good choices because it says whole grain, but it's in a grocery store bag that, you know, the bread lasts for 3 weeks, all these things are kind of signals that that's not natural. You know, my bread, I mean, I know you told me that my whole grain bread.
Right, that's different.
That's a different scenario. That's a sourdough bread that's, you know, super intense. That has a very long shelf life because of the sourdough, but... anyhow, it's I think I have enough scientist friends that that are fairly that are very focused on the gut and how we digest, and none of them believe the gluten is the problem. So, and the ones that write about it tend to be, what my observations are they're not really maybe true scientists, because my scientist friends are always trying to prove themselves wrong as a true scientist, I think, believe does. And if you're writing books and selling T-shirts or being on Dr. Oz and all that kind of stuff, I don't really trust their what they're really doing. Where the ones I know are, you know, trying to cure cancer and focused on saving the world and not really publicizing, you know, they're working in the trenches of trying to get us better. And it really seems like the majority of our problems are not eating whole foods, period. And it's a pretty simple solution. If we ate whole foods, we would all feel a lot better.
Absolutely.
And we're, you know, and we're spoiled in the Bay Area. Often we don't think about it because we do eat so many whole foods. But as soon as you leave any little epicenter of culinariness like this, where we're so spoiled, and you're in these other parts of the country, you can't believe what people eat every single day all the time. And it's not that they don't. It's not their choice necessarily. It's just the whole environment around them.
It's
is
what's
just
available.
What's available. And it's crazy. It's really crazy.
Yeah, I go to grocery stores a few times a year in Mississippi. It's even, it's a college town. But still, what's available.
It blows your mind.
It is.
It really blows
it
your mind.
Absolutely does.
It does tell you what kind of bubble we live in a lot of different ways. But the food scene here is a big, you know, all the farmers markets and all the, even the grocery stores, even the worst grocery stores here have like a mixed green salad mix, you know, in a tub or something, and some decent things. Where you go to giant supermarkets like in Mississippi or even Southern California, we were in Palm Desert to visit an aunt recently, and it was, there was no food, you know, it was all strip fast food places and not even grocery stores that we
oh,
you know,
not even any grocery
yeah,
stores.
Yeah, it was just crazy. I mean, miles and miles and maybe a grocery store. So.
Interesting. So back to what you're doing. And it's Petaluma or Pengrove?
It's the Pengrove exit, but technically
Pengrove exit.
Yeah,
there we go.
Yes, but it's in Petaluma. It's right off 101, right?
Okay,
there.
I know now exactly where it is. Tell us about some of the open to the public classes that you teach. What are some of those themes?
Well, we just had a. I mean, we've had some incredible people here. So I had this gentleman a few weeks ago. Andrew Ross, he's a PhD, I mean, he's a scientist up in Oregon State, and he's a grain scientist. So we taught the art of baking with science, and so we taught it together. And it was me teaching, you know, I'm a baker, you know, my skills are because of my hands, not because of my brain so much, you know. So I have a lot of ideas, but I don't know the science. And so to have a scientist while, you know, there hand in hand while, and he's a baker also, he's been baking his whole life, to be able to talk about it, you know, the exact, you know, science of what's going on behind the fermentation or the milling or, you know, the baking, the caramelization, mm-hmm. every single detail. We had somebody there that actually knew the science. Mm-hmm. So we had that 2-day professional class, but then we also had a 1-day amateur class. So that mm-hmm. Because often the amateurs are more read up about what we do than we have. So I often mm-hmm. have questions from amateurs. I'm like, I have no idea, nor do I care. You know, it's like, let's make a loaf of bread. Okay.
Uh-huh.
You know,
that's so, my next question. Yeah. It's hands-on.
Yeah. The most of them are hands-on. Mm-hmm. So we have intense, that was a very intensive class. Just yesterday or the day before yesterday or yesterday, I had Alice Madrick.
Alice Medrick.
Medrick, thank you. Yes. I always say it wrong a little bit.
That's okay.
She taught gluten-free. She has a book out on alternative flours, and so, mm-hmm. Which, you know, she does pretty whole grain versions of those. So mm-hmm. she was using teft and corn and almond flour and these type of things. She wasn't using a lot of starch, which I was, you know, really happy about because mm-hmm. a lot
was
of
she doing sweets.
She was doing sweets.
Okay,
she
that's
was doing
her specialty
thing.
Is
yeah.
sweets.
Yeah, so that was a hands-on class. There were 12 people in that class that she spent 3 hours with, and they did an amazing amount of products yesterday. It was really fantastic. Mm-hmm. I teach for the amateur. I have a couple classes that happen almost every month. I do a baguette class because I'm kind of known for baguette. Mm-hmm. So we have a 3-hour. It's kind of a fun class. It's just 3 hours, but if you're into baking at all, it's worth going to. It's a very good one to see if you would like to come to our school in the future. It's a mm-hmm. you know, somewhat inexpensive. I think it's $75, mm-hmm. But you walk away with you know, some power around baking that you didn't have before you came in. And so people just love that class. It's so popular. I teach it once a month. Uh-huh. I also have a serious home baker class, which is a very intensive, maybe my most intense class I teach of anybody. It's a 2-day course, and by the time you walk out of that course, your head is spinning, you know, with new information because, uh-huh. you know, unfortunately, the books that are in our country, the majority of them aren't very good. Mm-hmm. And for me, I try to explain to people that my peers around the world, we all have the same playbook. You know, we're not like, there isn't like this crazy, I do my thing and this person does his thing. My educated peers, master bakers around the globe, mm-hmm. we all play from the same playbook. We just may throw out different plays, so to speak, or mm-hmm. have little different routines, but the logic comes from the same book. And so that's not the case with American baking books.
Right, yeah, it's certainly
there's
not.
A lot of people that have written books that know nothing about baking, mm-hmm. and they write crazy things that aren't true. It's, you know, it's baking is science, so it's not that mysterious.
Right.
You can allow yourself to think it is, mm-hmm. but the facts of the matter is it isn't. It's mm-hmm. pretty, for me, it's very predictable, mm-hmm. and I'm very exact and precise, and I measure and weigh, and I know what's going to happen when I do this. Mm-hmm. And all of my peers around the world would agree that what I did is like, oh, this is what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So I try to tell people to forget everything they knew before they walk in the class and just mm-hmm. let it, you know, wait till the 2 days are over, because it takes kind of 2 days for everything to kind of come together. And just trust me that I'm going to get you a more powerful understanding of baking mm-hmm. and a freedom. My intentions aren't to sell you formulas or recipes.
But to give a foundation of knowledge.
Yeah. My intentions are for you to go and do what works for you in your mm-hmm. facility with the playbook. Mm-hmm. So you have the playbook and you can do whatever you want to do within the, it gives you all the parameters of any hour or time that you want to do and be able to make bread.
There you go.
Yeah.
What do you have any sense of what the most common things are? And let's put sweets aside. I'm much more interested in the savory side of mm-hmm. things.
Me too.
And I think sweets are a whole separate topic. Mm-hmm. So what is your sense of what most home bakers focus on when they're baking? Are they focusing on baguettes, croissants, pizza dough?
Well, pizza's big.
Okay.
Pizza's a huge thing. And it's really interesting because I'll ask you right now, what is pizza crust? What's your definition of pizza crust?
Something stretched thin with enough gluten to make it pliable. You know, I'm a real fan of Italian pizza.
Okay.
You know, some of the best pizza I've ever had has been in the airport in Sicily.
Right. I love that kind of thing myself. I mean, what the answer is any dough.
Oh, okay, sure.
So, without a doubt, the style you're talking about, you described it perfectly. But it can be a thick pizza or thin pizza. It can be whole grain. It can be any freaking dough you want to bake. It can be, you know, tomato basil bread, and you make it into pizza dough. So I kind of, it's because people really do focus on particular, like, this is what has to be pizza dough. I'm like, no, it doesn't. It can be any kind of dough you want to make it, and kind of free yourself from feeling restricted from that. As far as the, you know, I don't really, you know, I guess the current, you know, and I, some of my peers might cringe when I say this, but I think the person that's had the biggest influence, I mean, Peter Reinhardt initially, of course, had a huge opening to the home baker. I mean, his books are, you know, have influenced so many home bakers, and you have to give him kudos for that. I mean, not that I really care if there are a lot of home bakers or not. I'm a professional baker, but if I was like, if I think it's good for my business for there to be a lot of amateur bakers, you'd have to give Peter kudos. But currently it's tartine, right? So everyone's talking about making tartine style bread. But for me, I get a little, I mean, the reason I'd say my peers are going to cringe a little bit, because I don't particular, I don't call my, I don't have a Craig style of bread. And I don't really think there's a tartine style of bread. And I don't really believe there's a, you know, an Acme style of bread. We all using the same playbook. And of course, they have, it's Acme bread or tartine bread, but it's not, they didn't invent that. You know? And so I believe
Revolution bread.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm a big friend. I mean, Eli worked for me for years. You know, we're all, these are old, old. It's hard. It's a humbling craft. And it's hard to take credit for a loaf of bread, I think, because it's been around for, you know, now we're getting history of toast that was found 40,000 years ago or something in the last kind of National Geographic bread
toast?
Episode.
Yeah, 40,000 years ago? That makes me so incredibly happy.
Mankind knew what was good a long time ago.
Toast. Yeah. Absolutely.
So I think people are very interested in trying to replicate what we can do with in terms of artisan breads, trying to make breads that replicate a crusty, open crumb, sourdough style bread. So that's definitely a huge thing in the industry right now.
We think of sourdough bread as belonging, quote unquote, to San Francisco. What is your experience around the world with sourdough?
Well, I mean, if we think about this 40,000 year thing, San Francisco's been around for 160. They weren't using commercial yeast 40,000 years ago or even 200 years ago anywhere in the world. So that was all sourdough. All the bread in the world.
All natural, natural yeast, slow fermentation, because that's how things
work. Not necessarily slow.
No?
I mean, no matter what grain it is, I mean, even the, here in the Bay Area, what would be an example of the natives, or would it just be acorn or that kind of grain?
Yeah, we think acorn.
If that's powder form and it gets wet, it's going to ferment, right? Yeah. So how, it's hard to keep things dry, in fact. So I think anytime mankind was harvesting anything and getting it into a pile together, keeping it from fermenting was harder than keeping it to ferment, you know. So I mean, sourdough is really that easy. It's just adding water to flour and it starts to ferment. And literally for me, I, you know, I do these demos in my classes now that I get to do almost every week, where I just put flour and water together, and by the end of that day, 8 hours later, it's starting to bubble. So it happens very fast, and that's all in the flour. It's not the room. That doesn't come from anywhere but the wheat itself.
Okay, so it's not coming from wild yeast flying around.
It's the, those wild yeasts are flying around in the flour.
In the flour, okay.
Yeah. So I actually had this, as I said, Andrew Ross come through a few weeks ago, and he's like, I'm so tired of hearing about the air. It's from the freaking wheat, you know. And so, I mean, just like the grapes, if we did natural fermentation with grapes and made wine, which we've done for a long time before commercial yeast was available, it's going to ferment from what's on the grape itself. It's not from any other magic. Now, of course, when you're inoculating, you know, if you're keeping your own sourdough alive, there, I mean, there's a lot of common sense things that you're going to think, yeah, for sure. So if I was keeping a sourdough starter alive in a cave in a winery, like I did one time at Kundi Winery, you know, many, many years ago, I knew the winemaker at the time was David Noyes, and he was hoping to date my sister, so he acted like he... that he was interested in making bread. So I did the sourdough starter in his cave, and we kept it alive for many, many weeks in there. And without a doubt, the breads that were made from that had connotations of being the same kind of aromas and smells that you smell in a cave, a wine cave, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of really winey kind mm-hmm. of, and that's bacteria and yeast that are definitely inoculating too. They also now, there's so much science going on. Of course, whatever's on my body, if I'm feeding the sourdough, I'm covered in yeast and bacteria. Mm-hmm. So there will be small little strands of that stuff mm-hmm. also, but basically what the wheat has on it is going to be the strongest bacteria and yeast combination that's going to give the biggest bang for its buck, unless uh-huh. you go to commercial.
Uh-huh. Fascinating. So when someone tells you they couldn't get the flour and water mixture to do anything until they set it outside and let the wild yeast find it, that's anecdotal and not true.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's correct. It's not true. It might be something, the reason they set it outside, it might be warmer. It might be moisture, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, but basically what it takes, it's the bacteria that are in wheat are the same as same type of family as mushrooms, and it takes moisture to
wait
for them to be.
Say, okay, I want you to say that again more slowly. The bacteria
that are on wheat are the same family as a mushroom.
So it's the kingdom of fungi.
Kingdom of fungi.
Fascinating.
So that yeast and bacteria, am I saying that right? Because I do have a scientist next to me.
I think it would be the yeast.
The yeast, I'm sorry. The yeast and the wheat is the fungi family.
Okay.
So, and as we know, as mushroom or mold people or know any of that kind of stuff in the Bay Area, when it's wet, those things happen.
Right.
And when it's dry, they don't. And so the same thing with wheat. As soon as it's wet, it happens because it's all on the wheat itself. So, yeah, and we all have a lot of... baking especially has a lot of folklore, and when you have somebody that actually knows the facts, it's helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I know them, but I had Andrew with me a few mm-hmm. weeks ago, and he knew that one.
You obviously know a lot. You might say you're very humble.
Well, I'm
but you've acquired a lot of knowledge since you've been baking.
Yes. Yeah, I didn't start with the knowledge.
Uh-huh.
Well, now, some of my amateurs do, by the way. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of knowledge. And they're very confused to why they can't make a loaf of bread. And it's because, you know, it takes a lot of practice to make a loaf of bread. And when you make one a week, it's nothing like me as a professional that got to make hundreds every day.
What happens when they say that they can't make bread? What is the unsatisfactory final result?
Well, for me, it's what, you know, I see it in their hands. You know, the minute, you know, if they're covered with flour head to toe and all over their body, dough, they are, you know, not capable of handling the medium. They just don't have the experience.
Uh-huh.
So that's the primary frustration, is they have no idea how to shape a loaf of bread and or when to throw it in the oven or how to score it with a razor. They've put a lot of reading and thought into all those things.
Oh, so they literally don't know how to perform the different steps.
Big time.
Interesting.
And so I really try to tell them, I'm like, stop thinking about all of that stuff. I never knew whatever you read before mm-hmm. I became a baker. I didn't know anything that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. I may know something now because I became curious after I knew how to make a loaf of bread,
mm-hmm.
but let's just focus on making a loaf of bread. Let's just imitate my hands and just do this for now and not worry about whatever the names of the yeast are, or, you know, all this crazy stuff, the pH and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's like, let's bring this to a much simpler state of mind and mm-hmm. let's just shape a loaf of bread.
That makes total sense to me. How important is kneading?
Well, I mean, part of understanding, part of like my serious home baker class and all professionals I teach is understanding what no kneading to kneading a lot does mm-hmm. to your loaf of bread. And primarily the no kneading is more common in the style of breads that I'm familiar with. Mm. So very little to no kneading is not is more of an artisanal style bread.
Oh.
There's really no need to knead.
Oh, really? So it's not, I mean, I was always told you have to knead to develop the gluten.
Well, it develops all by its freaking self. It's
okay.
pretty amazing that just water. So does everybody understand that flour itself is gluten-free?
I don't think people do understand that.
So I always think it would be really funny for bags of flour to actually write on them that they're gluten-free, because technically they are.
That's hilarious.
There's two different proteins in wheat that need to be binded, much like a zipper, with water. And so if there's no water present, then there's no gluten.
So the gluten develops with the introduction of water?
Period.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Now, it can be developed a lot more by mechanical means and or fermentation. So the combination of just hydrating and using your hands or a mixer and the actual rising of the dough, all three of those things develop gluten. And the way that you manage those with the amount of time that you have, you can literally make a bread without kneading at all by just allowing fermentation and the absorption of water to happen. Now, these things develop different kinds of breads. If you mix or knead a lot, variant what we would call intensely, and I guess by hand that might be 20 minutes of kneading, you're definitely going more towards the Wonder Bread style of mixing.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, so you're incorporating quite a lot of oxygen, and oxygen actually bleaches the flour.
Oh.
And it also makes the gluten much stronger. So if you're looking for a tighter crumb, much like a Wonder Bread, you know, very small holes and not giant ciabatta holes where the butter falls through the holes, but you want a nice white bread.
Nothing like bread with big holes.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Or in some people's minds, that's not the bread they want. And they want a tighter crumb.
It's definitely the bread I want.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at the same time, you've just shattered one of my the physical process of kneading.
It's interesting.
I just love how it feels.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't want to take that away. And by hand, it's really hard to do what I would do in a machine, right? So it really takes somebody to overmix by hand, like maybe 30, 40 minutes.
No,
mixing.
I need for 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. So I know that a lot of people, it's a therapy thing. And go ahead, keep doing
it. Just feels
whatever,
good and it smells good.
Right. If whatever allows you to feel a little better, keep doing it.
And on that note, the hour is over.
Thank you so
much.
We
flew by, but I want you to tell people how to get a hold of you, where the retail store, let's give them all that information.
Okay.
1120 Holm.
Okay. I'm at 1120 Holm.
H-O-L-M-E?
Yes.
No E. H-O-L-M.
I'm a horrible speller. Road.
In Petaluma at the Penn Grove exit.
Correct. And
website?
The website is centralmilling.com.
Okay.
And it's also, you can also go straight to the artisanbakingcenter.com, but it has Artisan Baking Center on the website. And you can contact me at Craig@centralmilling.com.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You have to come back. It can't be like 6 or 7 more years. You have to come back again soon.
Okay, good.
You're fascinating. Thank you so much. And Diana, thank you as well. And if you thought this hour was as fascinating as I think it was, you definitely want to check out centralmilling.com and what Craig does. Maybe take a class. I'm going to try to do that. And I haven't taken a class in years. So thank you very much. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you as well. Meet me back here next Sunday at 6 for another yummy episode of Mouthful, smart talk about food, wine, and farming in Sonoma County and beyond, right here on KRCB. Have a great week.
Grapes are coming in the grassland.